Let's go, let's go, let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle. I want to go odd. 5-51 mirror.
This is Patriots Playbook.
Go stack guts combat. Odd. 51 mirror.
Patriots Playbook. Breaking down last Sunday's game.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They didn't have anybody to throw to. Just stay outside on the 7 route.
Next Sunday's game.
Be ready for the grapes check, too, okay? Because we'll get the punch on 3rd and short. Even 51 grapes. Even 51 grapes.
And the rest of the NFL season.
Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because the backers are going to fast read over the top.
And some of the fun stuff in between. Now, here's John Rook on Patriots Playbook.
Come on, let's go, let's go.
Welcome into the program, finally. For Prediction Thursday, hashtag Prediction Thursday, here on Patriots Playbook, I'm John Rook. How long were you guys planning on going today? I mean, you only had, what, 4 playoff games to predict? What the hell is all that about? And here it is, it's 2:16, and we're just now getting into the program. Let me just start with a little rant and rave this morning.
Listen,
this
I wasn't afternoon. Hosting the show. If I was hosting the show, I'd get myself in and out on time. I wasn't in the driver's seat today, okay?
Okay, all right. Escal is here from PFW. Now, before you
it
get off...
You the ones you love, man.
Yeah, I understand. I understand. But you're here. You're convenient, you know, and you know how we love to digress before we start a program. So I figured I'd start right off on that. All right. I know you got to get running because we are late getting into this program today. Nevertheless, practice report you can bring us up to date on today because they're out there
broken
just
record,
now finishing up.
Broken
right?
record that you're going to like.
Okay, good.
Perfect. Absolutely perfect. Everybody was there. Everybody practicing.
Perfect attendance.
Yeah. Out on the game field. In the
yeah, they were actually in the stadium today.
Yes. It's the last 2 days.
Last two days.
Actually, I don't know if I mentioned that yesterday, but that's where they were the last couple of days. And I gotta be honest with you, the cold didn't seem that cold. And you know
why? The sun's out.
Sun's out, and it wasn't really windy at the time
right.
either.
No
so
wind.
It didn't feel
and sun,
cold.
And this is supposed to be close to what it's like on Saturday.
Yes.
I've heard mid-20s at kickoff.
Right, because it's going to be 4:35. By that point, the sun's almost going to go down,
set,
so it'll
right.
get colder.
Right.
But certainly nothing that they haven't dealt with before or can't deal with. And it's probably going to be feel a little bit warmer on Saturday than it does now.
Where were our key issues then in terms of, I know we're healthy, at least it sounds like, because if everybody's out on the field, that's a great sign. Mm. Where are the key issues then in terms of injuries and or potential inactives?
Well, Brandon LaFell, who missed last week's practices, there were only 2 of them, but he came up, we thought it was an ankle maybe, but it was a toe that was listed on the injury report. He left the game in the fourth quarter, you remember, but came back and still played. Then there was a report afterwards that he was seen in a medical boot, and then he tweeted in all caps that he wasn't in a medical boot. Then he missed practice, made a big deal out of something that probably shouldn't have been made a big deal about. But he spoke today to the media as well, first time since the Buffalo game, the regular season finale. I don't know if I'd be completely concerned that he won't play. I would imagine he'll play, but... He did give an interesting answer when somebody asked him about that whole situation, the fact that you left the game but you came back and then you missed some practices. What do you say to people, fans, who might be concerned about your availability? And he said, oh, no need to be concerned. We got plenty of good guys on this team. And he mentioned, you know, the other receivers, Brian Timms and Josh Boyce and some of the other. And I'm thinking, well, if I were going to answer that as the person, as the player, I would say you have nothing to be worried about. I fully intend to play and be active. If he's mentioning other guys, that puts a little bit of doubt in my head that I didn't have before, that maybe he's a candidate to be inactive. And that's a little bit of a concern for me because he's been such a contributor, especially the second half of the season. Not that they can't win without him, but just that's a part of the offense that in the beginning of the season you hoped – as the biggest name offensive free agent, he would be able to contribute.
You and would think.
He started off slowly.
That's why you brought him here.
And then sort of came into his own midway through the season and towards the end there. He was basically the first down guy. Mm-hmm. Brady was throwing to him on first down almost all the time. So that just put a little bit of doubt in my mind that I didn't have before. I thought, well, okay, they just gave him a little time off last week. He's fine. The fact that he answered it that way just is something to think about. Mm-hmm. That I really wasn't thinking about before that.
Put a percentage on it. Go or no go?
I would still say he's a go 75%.
Okay.
Which is technically on the injury report,
that's
probable.
That's what it was.
That's
probable,
a probable.
Right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Although he'll probably be listed as questionable.
Yeah.
Tomorrow. when the final one comes out.
Well, of course, we all know that the inactive list doesn't come out until 90 minutes before kickoff, so we won't know until roughly
3 o'clock
on Saturday afternoon.
Right. And the other thing we'll have to look for is any game time decisions. Usually, if the medical staff is out there with a player or players 2.5 hours before kickoff, that's usually an indication that they're not quite sure if he can go, and they're giving him as close to kickoff a judgment as they can. And there haven't been many of those this year for the Patriots. There haven't been too many game time decisions. He might be a candidate for that, though.
Okay.
Because a toe injury for a guy who has to run around a lot, that's a huge problem, as you know. Turf toe has been is something that has kept guys out for long stretches of time. I wouldn't be surprised if he's a game time decision.
Okay. Anything else? Any other concerns that you might have just from your observations this week?
Well, no. I mean, it's just encouraging that they've been able to put all their guys out there, at least on a limited basis. The injury report for them was actually really small yesterday, comparatively so. I mean, look at that.
Yeah, That's only five guys?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Whereas in the final couple of weeks of the season, that report was in the double digits.
Yeah, it's usually 18 to 20 guys on the list.
It's almost a third of the roster.
It's almost
basically
the collective thumb at the nose of the NFL,
which is
what we know they do.
I mean, LeGarrette Blount had an illness that limited him. Edelman, the concussion, they took away the thigh injury. So that's notable because he had been dealing with that thigh injury that he got in Indianapolis way back in November. So that's good news for him as far as coming back. And LaFell with the toe, those are the main ones. So all in all, and so it looks like they escaped anything serious with Nate Solder when he left the game in the finale with the knee injury. Sebastian Vollmer missing time in that game completely with the back injury. They can't afford to lose anybody on that offensive line in this game, particularly with that
very
front sevens of the Ravens.
Very true. That seems to be the major concern, I think, for a lot of fans, at least that we've spoken to over the last couple of days. All right, so we've got the kickoff. Before you get out of here, though, I know you guys touched on this, and this is one direction that I wanted to take the program today. First of all, it is, of course, as we said, it's hashtag Prediction Thursday. So what I want you to do for your shot at the Yearbook Media Guide, and we've given away, how many have we given away this year? Two of them. We've had two correct scores, a couple of weeks in the Miami game. I'm going to talk more about Miami in a moment. But if you want to have your shot at predicting the score, best way to do it, pick up the phone, 855-PATS-500, webradio@patriots.com, the email, @JRBroadcaster on Twitter. That's the best way to get through because we'll have a complete record of it. So if you want to hit me up on Twitter, send your score, John.Rook on Facebook. Now, I mentioned, obviously, Miami. You guys touched on the whole Pro Football Talk report that we saw earlier today.
Don Shula?
Yeah, Don Shula came out just a little after noon Eastern time today, where a reporter for the Sun Sentinel, Fort Lauderdale Sun Sentinel, a guy by the name of David Hyde, he was doing a profile on Don Shula.
For his 85th birthday?
I believe so, yeah, he's turning 85, right. And so the subject of Bill Belichick came up, and the first thing that popped out of Shula's mouth was, Belichick? And I'm kind of like, when I saw the story earlier this afternoon, and then I heard local talk radio talking about it today, and then, you know, I walk into the studio this afternoon and I find out that you guys also mentioned it just a little bit as well. I'm thinking, wow. Now, either this guy, and I'm going to try to say this in as nice a way possible because, you know, first of all, I have goo for a brain myself. I mad cow disease is going to get me. That's what will be my undoing, there's no doubt. But at 85... man's already lost his marbles. I'm really disappointed in Don Shula. He did not need to go there, and I truly believe if he were of his senses, he would not have said what he did.
Do you think he meant what he said?
I think he did. I think he did. So I think he's taking truly a real Miami point of view, but I think if he had the capability, and I'm not saying he doesn't. I have to tread lightly here because I have, you know, this in my family. So, and like I said, even myself. So what I need to kind of be very careful about here is I believe that if he had had some time really to think it out before he just kind of blurted out, you mean Belichick? Then I think he would have retracted that. Or I think he would not have gone there. Because here's the thing that first popped into my mind about this. Number one, Don Shula was a head coach in an era where there were no rules. It was the wild, wild west of the NFL before all the rules, all the regulations, all of the laws that current day NFL teams must exist by. So because of that, you cannot tell me that Don Shula, whether it was with Miami or whether it was Baltimore, and he had some great teams with Baltimore as well, the Colts at the time, you cannot tell me that he didn't try to find an advantage over an opponent based on what the rules were, and there were no rules. So you're telling me that you didn't think about trying to steal signals? You're telling me that you didn't try, you know, filming somebody else on the sideline? You're trying to tell me you weren't trying to, you know, get inside info from a guy who was recently? I mean, all of these things are on the table. And I'm wondering if this has anything to do with the 72 Dolphins, you know, who were the perfect team, and, you know, all those guys that get together and celebrate after the last undefeated team goes down every year, which is the stupidest joke in the entire league. I think even those guys have to realize now that in this day and age in the NFL, for that to happen,
it almost did.
I realize it almost did in 07. I realize that. But for really, think about it for a second. With the way the NFL has stressed parity over the last two-plus decades? Man, you got to be kidding me. This is a different – this is not your grandfather's NFL right now.
Right.
And so because of that, I found it very odd for a gentleman who I've respected for years, his football skills, his teams, his coaching ability.
His restaurants?
Even his restaurants, for that matter, although I'm not sure I'm going back now because he's got one in Providence.
Yes.
I just found it odd, and I'm very disappointed in Don Shula, the senior statesman, and I put quotes around that phrase, the senior statesman for the National Football League. He's still one of the best coaches to have ever been involved in the game, but for him to drag Bill, I just thought it was a needless shot that he did not need to take.
Seemed to come out of nowhere. That's how I took it. It came, like, it's not like they really faced each other much, or there's any sort of bad blood between them that I could remember. I don't ever recall there being. Because Belichick was in Cleveland and Shula was still coaching
right. In
the NFL, so they must have faced each other at some point, but I don't recall.
On stabs, I'm not so – I don't know. I don't think it would have been as a head coach anywhere, would it?
Well, that's what I'm saying. Cleveland in the early 90s, Shula was still coaching.
He was still coaching. All right. That's possible. Yeah, that's possible. I just – for him to insinuate that Bill Belichick might have achieved some success for using what he, I guess, was termed unsportsmanlike, means. Mm. I'm just like, dude, look in the mirror.
It came out of left field to me. I mean, he's probably expressing what a lot of fans outside of this region think about this head coach.
But that argument is so incredibly trite. I mean, come on, Eric.
But I'm just saying it does. I agree with you. It seems weird that it comes from him, of all people. Like, maybe there's some sort of animosity there that we don't know about.
Someone,
I don't know.
Well, that's what I'm wondering. It may be something more hidden than that.
Yeah. That's...
But even someone at his, you know, at his age, and given his background, he has nothing. He has absolutely nothing to apologize for in his career. Shouldn't he be in a stage where he rises above this?
Yeah. You would think.
And that's what I'm most disappointed in. He has sunk to the level of all the other morons that are out there that use Spygate as an excuse for the Patriots winning Super Bowls.
We are human. We all make mistakes. Maybe the reporter caught him in a moment where he just was reacting.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Had he had a chance to think about it and been of his right mind, I don't think he would have said that.
Maybe. Or maybe he didn't care.
Listen, I say stuff every day that I wish I could retract. Okay, it just happens. Sometimes I just spit it out, and that's the way it is.
You do it
and
for
I
2 hours every day over here.
Yeah, that's what the show is for 2 hours. That's right. Oops, I wish I didn't say that. Thanks so much for reminding me. I actually, it's true. It's true. But I don't have the background of Don Shula. I don't have the football knowledge of Don Shula. I mean, my goodness, what I know would compared to him is a thimbleful. So that's why I'm like, wow, this is one of the icons of the sport. He is the George Halas of our era, certainly, without any question. It's almost like I've had a boyhood, I don't want to say childhood, because boyhood, early manhood icon bubble burst. Because I'm really disappointed in him. I'm just disappointed in him. I put Don Shula up there on the pedestal of the greats, and as well he should be, with the Tom Landrys, you know, of you know, the time of the George Halases, of the George Allens, who I admired even though I hated his guts because he was a Washington Redskins guy, and there's no way that I could ever root for the Redskins. I mean, guys like that, you know? He was above them all. And for him to stoop to this level, I'm just like, really, you're going to stoop to that level, that moronic level, you know, that, you know, 31 other teams, fans in the NFL, you know, come in with, oh, yeah, what do you think it's Spiky? Well, you know, they didn't, you know, I mean, what do we call 2007? I mean, they lost because of a fluke play.
Yeah, two fluke plays, really.
Two fluke plays, but certainly one primary one where the guy, you know, had Velcro taped to his helmet. And, you know, I mean, of course, I'm being facetious here, but I'm just saying that, really? And so, I guess this gets me to my ultimate point. Do the Patriots need to win this year to completely kiss off Spygate as an excuse for not winning Super Bowls?
No, I don't think that's ever going to go away in the people who really have that hatred in them. But I think they do need one more for fans here to feel like, well, it wasn't just a lucky run in the beginning of the Brady era. You know, I think if he can bookend his career with another Super Bowl title, I think that will pacify a lot of people who are critics of him.
All right, so if you've got your thoughts on the Pro Football Talk and Sun Sentinel story, I'd love to hear from you today at 855-PATS-500, or send the email or the tweet. Before you go, yeah, how did your thing go for NFL Now yesterday?
Great. It was actually really a lot of fun.
Did you win?
Oh, always.
Well, because your competitor, Ryan Mink.
Oh, I know.
He's going to be on the show next.
Oh, I know. I'm teeing him up again.
Are you going to tee him up again?
No. I'm teeing him now because he's probably on the line listening.
Well, so. He will be shortly. He will be shortly.
No, I got a good response from people on the Twitter machine.
Good.
About that. And,
good.
I think we're efforting trying to put that on Patriots.com.
Nice. So okay, that's excellent.
We'll let the fans be the judge of who won.
Excellent.
That.
Well, I'll get Ryan's story. I'll get his point on this as well, coming up in just a little bit.
All right, it was a good sport. We had a good time.
Nice.
Doing it. Yeah, it was my first time doing anything NFL Network related, so I really enjoyed it.
There you go. We need to see more of you.
I don't know about that.
What's your pick for the game on Saturday?
My pick is that it's going to be close going into halftime, and that in the second half, New England starts to slowly assert itself a little bit more and pull away. 38-20 is the final score.
Okay.
How do you like that?
All right. I'll take it. I guess we'll go with it.
The rookie is shaking his head at me. I don't think he likes that.
He doesn't like the score. Yeah, the rookie's in studio today. We're going to get to him in just a little bit
as well. Do not like the score or do not like the pick at all? Turn that mic on.
I don't like the score.
Okay, you like the pick.
Okay.
Just not the score.
I like the pick. I don't like the score.
Okay, that's fine. That's fine.
That's fair. Is it closer or
you think it's a closer game?
You
think it's
a
closer
game?
Oh, snap.
He's learning.
Put you in your place, Dad.
He's learning. He's learning. The art of the broadcast
right.
Tease. Okay. Well, see, it's good to know that money that keeps going to Marquette University is actually going to something good, and he's actually picking something up. Other than, you know.
I learned about watching you.
I learned from the best, right?
Oh. Now he's sucking up because he remembered. That's right. Tuition's
sucking up
from,
is
right?
Yeah, he understands, but that's not the way to go. All right, Biggie, see you on Saturday.
We will.
Yes, you will. Thank you, sir. All right, Eric Scalavino with his 2 cents worth as well. Before we continue on, we're going to get to your calls. We're going to get to your emails. I'm really interested in what you feel about the PFT story with Don Shula's comments as well. I've got something else that came from NFL.com. that I want to share with you as well and get your reaction. Before we get to that, I want to welcome in Ryan Mink, who covers the Ravens for Ravens.com into the program. Ryan, John Rook here in Foxborough. Thanks for taking some time today.
Yeah, no problem. My pleasure.
So I understand the gentleman that was just with us on the show, and Eric Scalavino, who writes for Patriots Football Weekly, you and he had the little tete-a-tete yesterday for NFL Now. How did it go in your opinion?
We had to drop the gloves, you know. I won. I mean, obviously. I mean, I think my best point on the show is when he says, well, the Ravens aren't the same because they don't have Ray Lewis and Ed Reed, right?
Yeah.
And 2 years ago, everybody, when we were coming up, they had all the Patriots supporters probably on this same radio show said those guys are washed up and they won't make a difference. So you can't have it both ways. Either they suck last time or they were the best. So you can't have it both ways.
That actually is a pretty good logical point. I'll have to give it to you. So if you use that as part of your weaponry yesterday, then I would have to say, okay, that's point one for you.
I appreciate it.
Well, no problem at all. Hey, I like what you had to say just a short while ago that you posted earlier this afternoon on the website about Justin Tucker, because one of the keys that I was talking about in this game yesterday had to do with special teams play, because the Patriots have played very well on special teams, and I think fans here forget that the Ravens also have pretty outstanding special teams, and Tucker may very well be one of the best, if not the best, kicker in the game.
Yeah, he's really good. I mean, he's been a weapon for the Ravens all year long, a Pro Bowler last year, and he's just made clutch kicks in the playoffs. You can't take that away from him. He has yet to miss, and I hate to say that and put the curse on him, especially in the land of Billy Cundiff up there.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, he's been rock solid for the Ravens. He's a guy who lives for this stage. He's a performer. I mean, he's constantly, he sings opera in the locker room, and I mean, this guy loves to perform in front of everybody. So, yeah, he's a big weapon for the Ravens, and I think they won't hesitate to turn to him even in a tough situation.
Right. All right, so, and I do expect that to also be the case. I expect that he'll get plenty of chances, and he's done it in bad conditions and good conditions as well. He's had, you know, he has no fear from any kind of distance as well. I've loved his swagger out there, which is something that you really need from someone in that position who's got all the pressure on him in certain situations. That being said, what do you feel like is the Ravens' advantage in this game? Where's it going to come from? Which side of the football?
It's the Ravens front seven defensively against the Patriots offensive line. I think that's where the Ravens can make some hay, shall I say. You know, the front seven of the Ravens is really one of the best in the NFL. I mean, that outside linebacker, the Doomerville Suggs combination, and it's not only those guys. McPhee, Courtney Upshaw, all those guys can get after it, and they all play extremely physical. And then you look inside, Brandon Williams is a guy who even Bill Belichick brought up, and Tom Brady, I believe, too, as a guy who's played really well this year. You pair him with Haloti Ngata and Timmy Jernigan, who looks like he's probably going to be back from an ankle injury. And you've got a formidable force up the middle, which we all know Tom Brady doesn't like that pressure right up in his grill. So if the Ravens front seven can beat the Patriots offensive line, I think it could disrupt a very dangerous Patriots passing attack.
Let me tell you that is the number one concern of our fans as well that I've heard this week.
Yeah. I mean, the front seven for the Ravens is really, that's their bread and butter. We all know about the injuries in the secondary. The thin back there, now they've played better recently. I think they've gotten some continuity, and some of the better stats recently have been because they faced Blake Bortles and back Connor Shaw from the Browns and whatnot, Case Keenum of the Texans. But, yeah, they played pretty well against Ben Roethlisberger and the bevy of weapons that they have in Pittsburgh last week, too, in tandem with that front pass rush.
So sure.
I think the secondary is better than it was before when it was getting torched midway through the season.
Right. Well, that was where I was going next. So where's the Achilles heel here, and how would you attack this defense, and is it in the backfield?
So I'm giving the game plan on how to attack the Ravens.
Absolutely. You know the Ravens better than anybody, so you should know how to attack them.
Well, I feel comfortable doing that only because I know Bill Belichick has studied them probably more. He probably knows the Ravens better than I do.
That's probably also true, but you're the next best thing we got here.
Right. The Achilles heel is obviously the secondary of the Ravens. I mean, they've had Jimmy Smith, their best cornerback, is on injured reserve.
Mm-hmm.
They've had numerous injuries there. You know, they've shuffled probably eight guys in the secondary back there, and that's been the problem. At safety, they've had a mix-and-match process there. You know, they haven't found one guy who's really stood out and claimed a stronghold on a position. So the secondary is the weak spot of this Ravens defense.
So now, if that is the case, would you be at all surprised to see the Patriots come out and try to attack them right off the bat with either the intermediate to deep game, or... In other words, what do you feel like the Ravens are expecting?
Yeah. I think what the Patriots are going to do is a lot of quick, get the ball out of Tom Brady's hands quickly. You know, it's going to be probably, spread it out. I would assume that we'll probably see a lot of three wide receiver, even four wide receiver, probably splitting out throwing count and try to get the ball out of Tom Brady's hands rather quickly. I don't expect them to take a ton of deep shots just because those routes take a little longer to materialize, and now you're giving Terrell Suggs and Elvis Doomerville some additional time to get in your face. So I expect a quick passing game, try to take, you know, basically move the ball down methodically 5-10 yards at a time on the Ravens and try to just pick up little chunks here and there.
I guess the other big question, Ryan Ming from Ravens.com joining us here in the playbook. I guess the other big factor would be, all right, so what do the Ravens do defensively in trying to box or limit or shut down Rob Gronkowski? You know, have you given that any thought? And what have what has the team said? You know, what has John Harbaugh said about trying to slow him down a bit this week?
They haven't really. I mean, they don't reveal too much of that kind of stuff about how they're going to do it.
Of course.
But I mean, I've thought about it. It's definitely the toughest time. And I mean, basically, the way I see it, there's probably two options. I mean, they had Will Hill match up against Jimmy Graham back when we went down to New Orleans, and Will did a very nice job. Now, you know, there were a few catches. Jimmy Graham, I think, caught 6 balls for 67 yards and 2 touchdowns, which you look at it on paper and for a fantasy owner, they'd probably be happy with that save for Jimmy Graham. But sure. Will Hill also got a pick 6 in that game and deflected a couple of passes away in the end zone. So Jimmy could have had a lot more, and Will played well against him. So maybe it's you know, they try to do that and match up Will Hill on the Gronk once again. Or maybe they use some of those outside linebackers like Suggs and Upshaw, and they beat up Gronkowski a little bit. You know, Gronk is too physical for your cornerback, and he's too physical for most safeties as well. But he's not too physical for Courtney Upshaw and for Terrell Suggs. Those guys could put a licking on him. And I wonder if the Ravens try to use those guys, at least when Gronk is on the end of the line of scrimmage, to try to beat him up a little bit.
Okay, that's interesting. On the other side of the football, Joe Flacco seems to bring, you know, his A game when it comes to games that matter. 10-4 in the playoffs, 21 touchdowns, just 8 picks. Why is he a different quarterback, it seems, sometimes in the postseason than he is during the regular season?
Well, I think that he's just got I think Joe performs well specifically when his back is up against the wall. There's no worries. There's when he can just go out there and sling it, basically. And I think that's the mentality that he takes in the playoffs, is you got to be aggressive. You got to go at people's jugulars because these are all good teams. And if you're going to beat a good team, you have to beat them. You know, you can't sit back and say, well, I'm not going to make a mistake and whatnot and expect to beat these teams. You got to go out there slinging confidently. And Joe always performs well in those situations. I mean, when you watch him in 2-minute drills, either before the end of the half or at the end of the game, and you say, all right, it's on Joe, he always performs well, or most of the time performs well in those situations. So the playoff is just like the playoffs are a continuation of the 2-minute drill, it seems like, at all times, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so he rises in that situation when the pressure is on, and you just got to go out and win a ball game.
Got to give him credit. He's certainly done that. He's done it, you know, 2 of the 3 times that he's been here at Gillette in the postseason. So I know that he doesn't have any fear, and I think that's one of the things that I've actually been talking about this week here on the program is that, you know, the Ravens guys that have been around for a couple of years on that roster, this doesn't faze them one bit. They've come in here and they've had success previously. So, I mean, why wouldn't they think that they could come in here and do it again? And I think that's their greatest strength.
I completely agree. Yeah, I think that confidence factor definitely plays in. The Ravens do not fall into the mystique of you know, Gillette Stadium. They feel like they can go in there and beat them, and they get their kicks off of it, to be honest. I mean, this team, they love beating Tom Brady and Bill Belichick. There's no doubt about it. They get very excited to do that. You know, they don't go in and kind of kowtow to the Patriots. They
right.
go in there bowing to them and saying, you know, they respect them, obviously. How can't you? You know, the Patriots are one of the best teams that have been for the past decade or more. You know, they respect them, but they really enjoy going up there and beating them, too. So if they go in with a little swagger, a little confidence, then I think that serves them well.
Ryan, let me ask you this. Do you think Terrell Suggs respects them?
No, I do. I do. You know, Terrell Suggs is funny. I mean, he's an entertainer. You know, I mean, and so he gives those quotes and whatnot. I think he feels like Tom Brady has gotten calls his way in the past, and feels like the rules have been bent a little bit for Tom and things like that. You know, all of the things that I'm sure you guys have heard all before, he pays attention to that stuff. So I think he respects him, obviously, as a great player. But I think it annoys him a little bit. You know, there's certainly a part of the population out there that thinks the NFL treats him like the golden boy that he is, deservingly so in some part. And 12 folks would fall into that category of the population.
I said that almost exact same thing yesterday. He's an entertainer. I think he knows exactly what he's saying, and he knows exactly what he's doing. And, frankly, it just adds to the mystique of the game. So, frankly, I applaud him.
Yeah, I mean, I like it. It's fun. You know, you want to have a rivalry that's fun. And you know what I like about it is it reminds us, I think, of the Steelers rivalry. You know, it's similar. You get some of that jaw and that back and forth, and it really has turned into that with the Patriots, which is fun. I love the Steelers rivalry, and I love the rivalry with the Pats, too.
So who would the Ravens rather beat, the Steelers or the Patriots?
Still the Steelers.
See, I thought so.
That will always be number one.
I thought so.
But when it comes in, you know, the higher the stakes of the game, that one always is sweeter. So, the Steelers, they're in a special category.
All right, so let me get your prediction on the game. Eric just said the Patriots are going to win. I think his score was 38-20. Let me get your thoughts. I expect you to think the other way, which is fine. But where do you think that's fine. No, I have no problem with that because you're close to it, and I totally get that. But what I'm going with is here, where do you feel like the difference in this game will be? In other words, what will be the difference maker to put it in the Ravens category if, of course, that's the way you feel?
Yeah, I think that I see this being more of a defensive game than I hear from a lot of people, you know.
I do, too.
Talking to Eric Scavino yesterday, he said, you know, the Pats are going to put up 30 or 40 on the Ravens, and I don't see that happening. I don't see it happening in cold weather, in the playoffs, you know, with the Ravens' red zone defense being as good as it is, number two in the NFL. They haven't given up a ton of touchdowns. I think that if this is a defensive battle, and let's be frank, Tom Brady's turned the ball over a lot against the Ravens, including in the playoffs, especially in the playoffs. So I think that it's more of a defense battle, and in that kind of game, a gritty back-and-forth game, it can go anybody's way. You know, I really think it could go down to the last possession. So with that in mind, I think that's the way the Ravens could win. Get some turnovers, get that defense rocking, and get that front seven after Tom Brady, and then you can maybe, you know, force them into making some mistakes and come out with a 21-20 victory.
21-20. All right. Well, you have it close, at least. I'll give you that.
I don't think the Ravens are going to blow them out. I'll say that.
Pretty safe bet, I think, either way, to be quite honest with you. Ryan Mayne covers the Ravens for Ravens.com. Thanks for spending a few minutes today, and safe travels this way.
Of course. Thank you very much.
You got it, Ryan. Thank you. Appreciate the time. And again, so there you go. You got the Baltimore perspective there a little bit. I fully expected him to go that direction, and the fact that he said 21-20 gives me just a little bit of reason to think, you know, there's just a little doubt right there. Just a little doubt, maybe, which is fine. I totally expected him to pick the Ravens, and he should, because he's closer to them than he certainly is to New England. But for the reasons that he said, I kind of am leaning that direction with my own thoughts on the game. I don't think it'll be an offensive game at all. I think we have to keep in mind that even though this is the playoffs and it's a different season, you know, the problems that I have intimated over the last couple of days here on the program are still problems until we see otherwise, and that is this team struggled offensively over the last month largely of the regular season. And until I see them crisp, sharp, and on point, I'm going to continue to think that. And you should as well. It's being real. It's not waving the pom-poms, nor is it, you know, slamming them to the turf unmercifully. It's reality.
And all this negativity that's in this town sucks.
Thank you, Rick Pitino. Thank you so much for that, Rick. And, you know, it's always good to hear from Ricky P. It really is, don't you think? I mean, especially when we need some good negativity going on.
Sucky, sucky, sucky.
Thank you. Thank you. Kevin's very happy because his toys all work today in the studio. They didn't work much yesterday, but they all work today. Right?
Surprised they're not frozen today.
Well, I was about to say, yeah, we've had single-digit temperatures here.
At least you've got the space heater in there.
Yeah, and it's actually not bad in here right now. It's still a little cool, but we've had single-digit temperatures with the wind chill factors in the minus single-digit temperatures over the course of the last, what, 24, 36 hours here?
See this, Ricky? I give the talent all the heat. I just freeze back here.
Yeah. Well, that's because...
Me and my bald head, very cold.
Wear a hat. Just wear a hat. That's all I'm telling you.
Yeah,
just,
what's your excuse? There we go.
See, there it is. Yeah, he's got the Patriot swag on. So does the rookie. He's got his Patriot swag on. And his Boston Bruins sweatshirt on. So it's all good there. All right, so here we go. 855-PATS-500. Web radio at Patriots.com. At JR Broadcaster Twitter. John.Rook on Facebook. Had a bunch of... By the way, thank you for the Facebook friendships yesterday. I had like a half a dozen or more come through yesterday just from yesterday's show and podcast. So if you have not joined on Facebook and you would like to, R-O-O-K-E is the spelling of the last name, and submit the friend request. And again, it's my own personal Facebook page, but I like to talk a little football and I like to get your thoughts as well. You can post on my page. I would ask that you keep it clean because it is my personal page, so there's a lot of other stuff on there. For instance, Kevin, today I posted a TBT, a Throwback Thursday photo.
You're into those now.
Oh, yeah, I'm into that because I'm old school, right?
But first thing I know, you're emailing me interview attachments with audio for the first time. Now you're doing TBT. You're like a technological maven all of a sudden.
Listen,
he's keeping up with the times.
He's going to take my job soon. He's going to be doing both sides of the glass.
You snooze or you lose. You snooze and you lose. That's all I can tell you. I found a photo from another Facebook group that, you know, I follow from my hometown in Fort Worth, Texas. And I found a photo. Someone posted it of, you remember, you're too young to know this because you're just, what, 28, 29? Okay. Have you ever heard of the TV show Romper Room?
No, but it sounds dirty.
Get your mind out of the gutter, Collins. Holy crap. No, it's not dirty. It was the precursor to Sesame Street.
It's a weird name.
Basically, well, you know, because kids, you know, when they play, they romp. That's what they do.
No, I get that.
Okay, so it was a 1950s, early 1960s era vintage old school television program that was carried by, you know, network affiliates and, you know, old independent TV stations all over the country. It wasn't just one station, because I know they had one in Providence, and I think they had a Romper Room in Boston, and they had one in the Dallas-Fort Worth area where I grew up, and it was carried on KTVT Channel 11, which was the independent station in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. It still is. Actually, now it's the CBS affiliate. Everything's changed over the years, of course. But it was Channel 11 in Fort Worth, and they have a teacher, for lack of a better phrase, a personality, a teacher that comes in with a preschool class is what it is. Preschool to kindergarten age, ages 4 and 5 largely. I think maybe some six-year-olds in there. Anyway, and so you sing songs and you do dances and you tell stories. And it was really a great way. It was sort of a precursor to the kids say the darndest things. You know, the late, great Art Linkletter used to do that on one of his TV variety shows years ago. And if you know what I'm talking about, Google it, you'll find it. Or YouTube it, you'll find it. I mean, if this is going over your head, then you have no clue what I'm talking about. Just Google it and you'll find it. But anyway, Romper Room was the TV show that was big then, because the Sesame Street didn't come about, I think, until the late 60s or early 70s. And they selected kids, and there were tryouts, and there were contests and things like that. I was actually on Romper Room when I was 5 years old, back in 1964. And so I found this picture on Facebook from this old, you know, Remember Fort Worth Win Facebook group. And I looked at the picture, and someone said, the capture of the teacher who was standing there with the mirror on the wall, and she used to do this kind of routine and everything. The teacher looked at her, and I said, God, she looks familiar, because she had the big beehive hairdo, kind of, and I remember that. And someone said on the Facebook post that her name was Miss Mary Lynn. And I said, that's it. That was the name of my teacher, Miss Mary Lynn. And that was the persona that she had on TV. And this used to be the show for kids back in the 60s.
They had TV back then?
They had TV. It was black and white. A lot of it was black and white back then. Yes. Black and white. And guess what? Only 4 channels, bruh. 4 channels. Okay? ABC,
going
NBC.
Back to the 40s, Paul.
Yep. CBS and independent. There was no Fox. There was no cable. That was it. You didn't even have PBS
back
then.
Years with the tinfoil.
Yes. Yes, exactly.
Little John Rook there watching his Romper Room with a tinfoil hat.
No. Wait a second. I did not watch Romper Room. I was on Romper Room.
Oh, that's different.
And this photo, dude, check out my Facebook page because I posted it, all right? And, dude, I am the second one from the left. So this picture is 50 years old because I was on that show 50 years ago. Not 50, 50. Is that all right, Rookie? Can I say that?
Okay, 50 cent.
Yeah, thank you. 50 years ago. Yeah, see, now Kevin's checking. He's like, I don't believe you. Why would I lie? I was on the show. Dude, tell me that's the second kid from the left on that photo. Tell me that's not me. Does that look like me? It actually looks like Rookie right here when he was little.
Yeah, it sort of does.
Sort of does. Okay. Well, I'll take that, I guess.
He's still not buying it.
He's not buying it. I had a buzz haircut.
Yeah, I could totally see that. You had good do back then, even.
I had the buzz. I wore the buzz almost exclusively from age 3 to about age 10. Buzz. Buzz cut. Yep, totally.
I just can't get this, like, this image or phrase out of my head. I'm going to take Miss Mary Lynn to the romper room.
Bite your tongue. Well, go. You know what? Go wash your mouth out with soap. You suck. Go wash out your mouth with soap.
So we're talking about social media, right?
Yes.
So I had an interesting Twitter exchange here with a good friend of the show.
Go.
And talking about things that scare you about this game.
Yes.
Something that I haven't heard anybody talk about.
Which is?
Steve Spagnuolo's influence on the Ravens.
Huh. And okay. How, so who was the Twitter war with?
No, it's not a war. It was just a very insightful discussion and conversation about how that's kind of an under-the-radar element to this team that may worry some people, given he was, you know, the Giants' defensive coordinator when they shut down arguably the best offense in the history of the game.
Right.
In 2007, the greatest show on whatever, you know, perfect season, we all know the story. How many touchdowns, you know, where Brady had the 50-plus touchdowns and Moss had 29 or whatever it was. And all of a sudden come the Super Bowl, big dud. And you can't tell me that Steve Spagnuolo and his scheme, and obviously his players were a big part of that, but that's kind of an under-the-radar element to this game that I haven't really heard talked about.
That actually is an under-appreciated, I think, element to the game. And I'm glad you brought that up because, quite honestly, the other issue that I want to bring up in terms of this game leading into it is, did you see what Brian Billick had to say on NFL.com about this matchup between the Patriots and Ravens?
I know he said it was going to be closer than that. He said it was going to be really hard, and the Ravens were going to give the Pats all they could handle.
Yeah, he didn't
come
right out and give a score. But, you know, I mean, first of all, what would you expect? He's a former coach of the Ravens.
But he intimated or hinted that it was going to be a very difficult game for the Patriots.
He did say that. He did say that. And frankly, the points that he issues, I won't read through it here. I'll let you go to NFL.com and find it. You can find it rather easily. The points that he brings out are also very good. I'll read just a smidge of it if you haven't seen it. He says, the fate of the conference title, a little bit more in doubt. Patriots fans might dismiss my faith in the Ravens as stemming from inherent bias owing to my 9 years coaching in Baltimore, but let's look at the salient facts. First of all, I like the word, his use of the word salient. Tells me he's got some intelligence there, right? Since Joe Flacco and John Harbaugh arrived in 2008, the Ravens' postseason performance, both in general and matched up directly against the Patriots, is undeniably great. Not good, great, he says. And in just about every comparison, Flacco comes out ahead of slam dunk Hall of Famer Tom Brady. He compares 14 career playoff games, Flacco 10-4, 21 touchdowns, 8 picks. During that stretch, 13 completions of 25 yards or more against the Patriots secondary.
This is also a different secondary.
Understood. And I think he probably realizes that. Meanwhile, over his last 14 playoff games, Brady is 7-7. 7-7. 7 wins, 7 losses. 26 touchdowns, 17 interceptions, just 7 explosive plays of 25 yards or more. And then Coach Billick says the two quarterbacks have faced off 3 times in the postseason. Although all 3 contests have taken place at Gillette Stadium, Flacco has come away with 2 wins. In those games, he's averaged 193.3 passing yards, 5 touchdowns, 2 picks. Brady, 237.7 passing yards with a total of 3 strikes, scoring strikes, and 7 picks against the Ravens secondary. Yes, there are some mitigating factors. Flacco has had better protection and often better receivers to throw to. Also, the raw numbers are a bit skewed because over the course of these games, Brady has thrown the ball 50 more times than Flacco. And then again, no one can deny that Flacco has exhibited the skills to master New England's defense, even on the road. Okay, I bring that out because it's really hard to argue the hard numbers. In other words, here we go with another case of ball don't lie. Because it doesn't. Stats don't lie. Numbers don't lie. In this case, hey, he's had better numbers in those 3 games. Guess what? The Ravens won 2 of the 3. Again, there are mitigating circumstances simply because this is a different Patriot defense. But we won't know until they kick it off Saturday afternoon. Anyway, I bring that out for your general consumption. I bring that out for your general reaction. I bring that out overall because I'd love to know what you think about it, as well as the entire issue with Don Shula earlier calling Bill Belichick Belichick, which I thought was a low blow. All right, so 855-PATS-500. We're going to get to Russell Baxter coming up in a little bit, but let's first of all get to Trey in Memphis, who's been kind enough to hang on for a while. Hey, Trey, you're in the playbook.
Hey, John, how's it going, man?
Good, good, buddy. What's happening?
Man, you know, I would really love to talk about, you know, these gun shooters coming, but John, I would not even indulge in that conversation. I mean, I don't even really want to. We hear enough ignorance as it is, man. So I'm just not going to talk about it. The dude is just a stupid, selfish, ignorant bastard. I'm just going to leave it right there. Because that's just ignorant, man. So,
all right, tell us how you really feel.
I'll talk about the game, man. And, throughout listening since you've been on the air today, it was a great point, you know, presented. But, I mean, John, I'm at this point now, man. You know, I could care less about the history with the Ravens and the Patriots. You know, over the past couple of years, you know, what, a few years or so. I mean, but, John, I really don't even care, man, about what happened. I mean, you know, this is 2014, 2015, New England Patriots, and just like you said and a lot of others said, John, man, the Ravens are going to face a defense that they haven't seen from the Patriots in quite some time.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm, like you said, man, numbers don't lie. You know, the numbers are there. But I just feel that this time, John, things going to be a little different, man. I mean, no, I really do. I know the Ravens are going to bring their A game, you know, and they should. But, you know, a lot of people are really discounting, you know, this Patriots team, man, and especially the defense. And, you know, the defense, they're not getting any credit, you know. I mean, they're not getting any credit at all. And, you know, and if I'm the Patriots, I kind of like it that way, to be honest.
Right.
I like it that way.
Right. That's all understood. I actually think it will be different myself. It's not going to be an easy task by any stretch, but
right.
I think
right.
It'll be different. It's myself. So, how about a score prediction then?
Well, John, I'm kind of like with my man. I'm in that 38-20 range. I do feel that, you know. I mean, John, one thing that I am hoping, just like you are, I want to get the ball, man. I want to receive the ball. If we win the toss, I want the ball.
Thank you, Trey, for having my back on that one. I appreciate that.
I want the ball, man. I want the ball. I mean,
how do you really feel, Trey? I want the ball. That's exactly right.
John, my thing is this right here. We can get the ball, man. Let's get an 8-10 play drive. I mean, hell, if we get a field goal, done, it's fine. I'd love to get a touchdown, but I want the ball.
I'm right there with you, brother. Thank you. I'm going to interrupt for just a moment, however, because I've got a special visitor in the studio. He's actually been on the air for the NBC Sports Radio Network just a short while ago in one of our adjacent studios. And I know that you visit the website often with a lot of the good stuff that they have on it. In fact, we've already talked about it a little bit here today in ProFootballTalk.com. And PFT's own Mike Florio-Jones is here in studio. Mike, thank
you. What's going on, guys?
Appreciate the time. Thank you very, very much.
Oh, glad to be here.
This is my son, Austin. He's a broadcasting major at Marquette University.
How's it going?
Sitting in with me a little bit. So.
How's it going, Austin? Shouldn't you be in school?
Still on break.
Still on break.
Boy, I miss those days.
Don't you? I do, too.
Yeah.
I do, too. That month off, that was awesome.
That's the only reason I think my son's looking forward to college. He's finally realized that the break is a lot longer than it is in high school.
It's pretty nice.
It is nice.
I keep telling him the break's going to be even longer if you don't buckle down.
Yeah, bingo. Thank you for that. Appreciate that. Are you listening over there?
I'm listening.
Okay. The reason that we actually brought up PFT in particular today, Mike, was the little story that came out about the newspaper article that was in the Fort Lauderdale Sun Sentinel, where Don Shula just kind of blurted out Belichick in reaction to Bill Belichick's name coming up. And I honestly, that stunned me because I'm about as old school as they come. You know, know, I remember that I have put Coach Shula up on the pedestal, maybe even more than he deserves to be there, because I think he embodies everything that what we have now in the National Football League. He was there at the very beginning. Great coach, wonderful human being, seemed to do everything the right way. And for him at age 85 to slip and say something like that, I'm beginning to wonder. And again, I said this earlier, and I have to be careful with this because I got this in my own family, but is marbles slipping just a little bit?
Well, it's not necessarily marbles. It's that as we age, there's a filter between our brain and our mouth that starts to wear out.
It happens to me daily, so I understand that.
My father-in-law, for example, he says what he thinks. And he's going to be – he just turned 78, and he says what he thinks. And more power to him. But there's something about being that age, and I don't know whether it's like, you know what, who cares? What are they going to do to me? I mean, what are they really going to do to me that time hasn't already done to me? But, yeah, I end up having to leave bigger tips than usual sometimes because the service wasn't to his liking. So it doesn't surprise me.
Yeah.
And I'd love to know what Coach Belichick's reaction is. We were just talking about that as we wrapped up our show on NBC Sports Radio. Will someone ask him about it at a press conference? Will he say anything? Will he just shrug? Will he roll his eyes? Will he just stand there?
I can imagine he'll probably just shrug.
I don't think anybody would even ask him.
Someone might if they get a chance over the next day or so. Someone will probably ask just because people are talking about it.
Yeah.
I mean, I've heard it already on local radio here. Clearly, it's been on network radio. We're talking about it here with Patriots fans all over the globe right now. So that's just, I would imagine that someone will ask him, but I think his reaction will be fairly predictable.
Yeah, but you just wonder deep down, does it sting him? Does it hurt him? This whole stigma from Spygate, and you hear it all the time. People say, oh, the Patriots haven't won a Super Bowl since Spygate. That means that they can't win unless they cheat. That's baloney. And it's easy for me on the outside to say that's baloney. But when you're the Patriots, how do you get past that? How do you get rid of that stain? It's got to be maddening. It's got to be beyond frustrating to try to get past that when you know that the whole Spygate thing really didn't, number one, do all that much to help. And number two, everybody's doing something they shouldn't do. Everybody's doing something they shouldn't do. Whether it's tampering, whether it's, stealing signals, whether that's just part of the game, trying to find someone's playbook.
It's trying to get an edge. It's all about gaining an edge.
Yeah.
And you know what? In the days before the current NFL that we exist in, there weren't any rules. It was the wild, wild west. And so you're telling me that Don Shula didn't do a little something back in the day? I think that's baloney as well.
Yeah, it kind of reminds me of the old, before Lance Armstrong admitted what everyone knew. It's like, wait a minute, you're by far the best participant in a sport where everyone but you is cheating. Okay. And you're far and away better than any of them.
Right.
Okay, fine.
That's just the way it works.
Yeah.
You were kind enough to step in here after you got off the air, so I'm not going to hold you. But I do want your thoughts on the matchup Saturday afternoon and where you think this one might come down.
I'm amazed by the stat that Bill Belichick is 11-1 at home in the postseason against everyone but the Ravens, but 1-2 against the Ravens.
Yeah.
And easily could be 0-3.
Sure, we know that.
If Lee Evans can hold on to the ball just a split second longer, maybe it's 0-3, although we don't know what would happen the next year.
Or Billy kind of doesn't shank one.
Yeah, and that it would have gone to overtime that year, and who knows what would have happened. So I think it's funny to hear Tom Brady say it's an entirely different team now than it was then. Well, now, wait a minute. If the two most important jobs on a football team, it's the same, quarterback and coach. Same quarterback and coach for both teams. Harbaugh and Flacco versus Brady and Belichick. Same. So, and everything else is just pieces. And I know more pieces, better pieces for the Patriots now. But the Ravens have proven time and again, it doesn't matter how they get to the playoffs. Once they get there, something happens. Once they get there, something changes. And I think it's a Harbaugh DNA thing because it's happened with the 49ers. Not anymore. And it's happened with the Ravens. And I think that it would be foolish. Now, it's one thing for fans to say, we're fine. It would be foolish if the football team, if the coaching staff, if the people responsible for trying to go out and score more points than the Ravens just kind of brush this all off. That would be a problem.
Yeah. Well, the teams are different from the last time they played in the playoffs, and I think a lot of fans are pointing that out, and we've heard that from some of the people that we've talked to this week outside of the media as well. The fact of the matter is it boils down to a couple of different things, the playoffs with a different season. I do believe there is something to momentum as well, although and the Patriots have kind of slacked off offensively over the course of the last month leading into this game. It's a bit of a worry. I think the matchup that Baltimore has with their front seven defensively against the Patriots offensive line that is, let's just say, has had good days and not so good days this year, I think is a huge key to this game. And if the Patriots don't figure out a way to turn the Ravens over somehow, then the Ravens will be right there at the very end to take it.
Let me give you my other favorite stat of the week, and it deals with this topic of momentum that you brought up.
Sure.
Of the last 18 number one seeds in the divisional round, how many have advanced to the conference championship game?
I would say, and we're talking AFC, NFC, what?
Total. 18. Last 9 years, 18 number one seeds, both conferences. How many advanced to the conference championship?
I'd say half.
Exactly.
Wow.
Nine. Nine out of 18 have won.
And you think it would be more than that.
That's right. But what happens is you get that week off, that's great. You get healthy, that's great. But what's not great is you've got a team coming in to play you that just won a playoff game. They've got momentum. They're feeling good. They're feeling loose. We're supposed to lose. Everyone expects us to lose. You know, in a roundabout way, this whole Ravens narrative makes it harder for the Ravens to come and win. When you come, like I remember Jacksonville and Denver back in 96. Nobody expects that team to come in and beat the number one seed. So you can just go play football. There's no pressure. The pressure's on the number one seed. So, I mean, there have been times where I said, boy, they'd be better off. There's just no bye whatsoever for the number one seed.
Agreed.
Keep playing.
Agreed.
Don't play the number eight seed. Use that as a tune-up for the next game. Don't go in and get caught flat-footed. I think that happens. They get caught flat-footed, and then the crowd gets taken out of it. And the next thing you know, one out of every two times over the last 9 years, number one seed goes home. And I don't know that either number one seed is going to go home this weekend, but it didn't happen last year. So we've forgotten about that dynamic because last year both number one seeds
won. They advanced. This came from the NFL earlier today, and since the league moved to a 12-team playoff format in 1990, the number one seed in the AFC is 14-10.
There you go. And it shouldn't be. You just think it shouldn't be that way. It's supposed to be a bigger advantage. You've worked all season to get that edge, and it's really not that much of an edge.
No, it's not.
And we've seen 6 seed, 5 seed, 4 seed. It's all about getting hot at the right time. That's why all this talk about expanding the playoffs, people are like, oh, we're going to water it down. You let this 7 seed in, maybe the 7 seed's the one that finds the gas pedal in January, and it just makes it all the more exciting. 7 seed goes and plays the 2 seed, and that's going to happen next year. I'd be shocked if that doesn't happen next year, where we have 2 more teams. The number 2 seed plays, and the only bye is going to go to the team that gets the 1 seed.
Yeah, that's what I think, too. I'm sure that seems to be the logical way. Can you give us a prediction on what you think will happen?
I have not made my official pick yet. Here's
you're
going to
save that for TV, right?
No. I'm saving it for the website tomorrow.
Okay, even better.
I've got a guy that I compete with, and he has a way of finding out if I tip my picks. But here's the thing.
All right.
I picked Seahawks-Patriots for the Super Bowl back in September.
You're going to stick with it?
How can you go against that?
Yeah.
So I think, and I also do think that this recent trend with, I think the Patriots are going to be ready for this because the Ravens have had their number up here. And Gronkowski and Revis, and I think the Patriots, we get caught up in the compelling storyline.
Right.
I don't think it's going to be all that compelling. I hope it's compelling. I hope it's a great game and people stay on NBC, but I have a feeling it's not going to be.
Wow. All right. Well, then see, Mike Florio says so. We'll see you on the TV coverage on Saturday, and stay warm while you're here.
That is going to be impossible, but I'll try. Thanks,
thank
guys.
Thank you, Mike. Appreciate it.
Good luck to you.
You bet. Thank you. Mike Florio from ProFootballTalk.com and NBC, and he'll be part of the television broadcast, of course, with Al Michaels and Chris Collinsworth from here at Gillette Stadium on Saturday afternoon into the evening. So there you go. Still need your predictions on the show, 855-PATS-500, webradio at Patriots.com, at JR Broadcaster on Twitter, John.Rook on Facebook. Kev, let's get in a sponsor, say hello, right here, and then we're going to come back, get some phone calls. Russell Baxter, pro football guru, coming up.
Hey, what kind of sub is that?
It's the Subway Big Hot Pastrami.
Subway Big Hot Pastrami?
No, pastrami.
Pastrami!
What? Hey, get back here! Pastrami!
No, pastrami!
Look, it's the Subway Big Hot Pastrami!
Wanna split it?
A little late for that.
Get your own Subway Big Hot Pastrami Melt, a monument to flavor loaded with dry rub, pepper-crusted beef, and melty cheese. Enjoy yours with mustard and pickles. Subway, eat fresh.
Limited time only at participating restaurants.
Ask the rest of the country what comes to mind when they think of New England. The answer isn't Paul Revere or Tri-Corner Hats, maple syrup or Walden Woods. they now think of dominance. The success of the sleeveless hoodie, 3 Super Bowl championships, AFC East champions 10 out of the past 12 years, the first NFL dynasty of the millennium. So while the other 44 states now think of us more for our wins than clam chowder, that's fine. Just ask anybody here. The Pats are all we think about, too. Gillette is proud to have played a role in the ascent of the New England Patriots, our New England Patriots. Because the logo hanging high above Gillette Stadium isn't just team sponsorship. It's our declaration of allegiance to the fans from Maine, New Hampshire, Vermont, Massachusetts, Connecticut, and Rhode Island. The New Englanders that have helped make Gillette what we are today. From Boston for New England, we're Gillette, the best a man can get.
It's Jim from Ace Ticket. The New England Patriots are back in action, and Ace Ticket, the Patriots' official fan travel partner, is behind the team, from Foxborough all the way to Arizona. Ace Ticket is your official home for all Boston sports tickets, with free and easy pickup in Kenmore Square, across from the Boston Garden, or game day pickup at Patriot Place. So treat yourself or impress someone. Go to aceticket.com or call 1-800-MY-SEATS.
Before Jenny met her new nephew, Wyatt, before she drove to New York, and before she picked up a Boston Red Sox onesie down the street from her Alston studio, Jenny got 1% back on tires, 2% back on snacks, and 3% back on gas using her Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card. So Jenny got ready to do what she loved with cash rewards she liked. That's the power of the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card. That's Bank of America. Life's better when we're connected. With the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card, you can earn 1% cash back on all purchases all the time. 2% cash back on groceries and 3% cash back on gas. Apply today at bankofamerica.com/getcashback. Grocery and gas bonus rewards apply to 1,500 in combined purchases each quarter. Call 1-888-224-8735 for details about credit costs and terms. Copyright 2013 Bank of America Corporation.
Xbox One is not only a game console, but the home entertainment system every fantasy football fan needs. The NFL on Xbox One is your connection to all things fantasy, giving you personalized news, highlights, stats, and scores instantly on your TV. Watching your favorite team play on Sunday but wondering how your fantasy players are doing? With built-in fantasy football, track your updates on TV in real time across NFL.com fantasy leagues, all while still watching live games. Xbox One, bringing fantasy football to your TV. Now available for $349 at a Microsoft store near you.
NFL Mobile from Verizon is perfect for a guy like me. At home or on the go, NFL Mobile keeps me connected to all the action across the league. I can watch live NFL games on Thursday, Sunday, and Monday nights. Track player and team news, player tweets, watch NFL Network 24/7 and more. Plus, with NFL Mobile, I have real-time access to NFL Red Zone, so I can watch every touchdown from every game on Sunday afternoons. So I'll never be without football. Especially when Jaws and Muffin can't find that oh-so-perfect spot. Oh, hold up. Go, go. That's it. Come on, kick it in hyperdrive. Touchdown!
Get NFL Mobile on America's largest 4G LTE network and discover why more people choose Verizon than any other network. Call star NFL to download NFL Mobile now. Verizon, official wireless provider of the New England Patriots. Airtime message and data usage applies. Available on select smartphones. Coverage not available everywhere. Don't call or text while driving.
Ask the rest of the country what comes to mind when they think of New England. The answer isn't Paul Revere or tri-corner hats, maple syrup or Walden Woods. They now think of dominance. The success of the sleeveless hoodie, 3 Super Bowl championships, AFC East champions 10 out of the past 12 years, the first NFL dynasty of the millennium. So while the other 44 states now think of us more for our wins than clam chowder, that's fine. Just ask anybody here. The Pats are all we think about, too. Gillette is proud to have played a role in the ascent of the New England Patriots, our New England Patriots. Because the logo hanging high above Gillette Stadium isn't just team sponsorship. It's our declaration of allegiance to the fans from Maine, New Hampshire, Vermont, Massachusetts, Connecticut, and Rhode Island. The New Englanders that have helped make Gillette what we are today. From Boston for New England, we're Gillette, the best a man can get.
Follow the Patriots like never before with the official Patriots mobile apps for iPhone, Android, and iPad. Get instant access to all the latest news, stats, and analysis, plus live Patriots Game Center. Search New England Patriots in your device's app marketplace to get the latest Patriots news, audio, and video in the palm of your hand. Download the official Patriots mobile apps today and stay connected.
Good afternoon. My name is Russell, and I am a wilderness explorer in Tribe 54, Sweat Lodge 12. Are you in need of any assistance today, sir?
It's time to go around the NFL with football guru Russell Baxter on Patriots Playbook.
We're always in need of assistance, so who do we turn to? The one and only ProFootballGuru.com himself, Russell Baxter. Russell, it seems like it's been forever, so how was your holidays?
Oh, it was terrific. It had some interesting moments and so on, but it was a lot of fun. And I actually made it to midnight this year.
Come on, you old fogey, you made it to midnight.
It's probably about the first time in about 3 or 4 years, and I couldn't believe it. I don't think I've recovered since.
Yeah, well, there's something to that, right? Hey, no pain, no gain.
Exactly.
No pain,
exactly.
No gain.
But the holidays were great. I'm sorry I missed the game show last week because I had some other things going on. But now we're down to the games.
Yeah, we are.
The final eight.
Yep, this is it, totally. I have to admit that it seems to me these teams all, for one reason or another, are all kind of playing, where they should be right about now. And these are probably the best representatives of the eight teams. In other words, I don't think anybody really squeaked in here. Do you?
Well, no, not at all. And let me tell you something interesting. At least I find it interesting. You've got New England,
yep.
Denver, Dallas, Green Bay, and Seattle, all at 12-4.
Right.
That's the best record in the league this year.
Correct.
The first time in the Super Bowl era, at the very least, that five teams co-owned the best record in football.
No kidding.
And I bring that up because there had never been more than three, and this year it was five.
So that just speaks to the balance, I think.
Yeah, I mean, meanwhile, how this league was in terms of all the way down. So, you know, I mean, teams, you had a pair of 2-14s. You had three and thirteens. So I mean, it was there wasn't a lot of. It's funny the years we got with Pittsburgh and Dallas the last couple of years with all the 8-8s.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, Miami was 8-8, San Francisco was 8-8, and I think that was it.
I'm trying to think back myself off the top of my head. I think you're right.
And meanwhile, we wound up with 12 teams in the AFC with winning records. 12.
12, correct.
And, of course, obviously all of them, didn't go to the – was it 12 or am I miscounting?
No, I think that's right.
Oh, okay. Or is it 10? I'm sorry. Wait a minute. 1, 2, 3,
3 4, 5. I'm looking at the standings now.
Sorry,
yeah.
10.
It is
10. Bad.
Yeah, I just looked.
Which means the 4, 9, and 7s there didn't make the playoffs.
Right. Right. So 9 and 7s, yeah, it just wasn't good enough. Wasn't good enough. Speaks to the overall quality of play, speaks to the fact that, I think outside of New England, this thing is pretty much up for grabs, and I think the team that's in here on Saturday afternoon certainly feels like it can take it. Now, before we get to that one, let's start with the other. Let's start with the other game on Saturday, and that's the NFC game, the Carolina-Seattle game. We just spoke with Mike Florio from Pro Football Talk, who I know you know. And he managed to say that, when I asked him for a prediction for this one, he said, I'm not going to leak that out just yet, but I will tell you this, hard for me to stray from my original Super Bowl prediction before the season began. And he said, I had Seattle and New England back in September. So that kind of leads me to believe what he's thinking here. And so for Seattle to be a part of that mix then, they have to do something that, a Super Bowl team, defending Super Bowl champion, hasn't done in a very, very long time.
Yeah, that's what a playoff game. The last team to do it was New England in 2005.
Bingo, that's right.
Because they've either lost the playoff game or didn't even bother to make the playoffs. It's been an unusual streak. And there's a lot of, idiosyncrasies in terms of streaks going on here. You just mentioned that one. Seattle's attempting to become the first team to even get the back-to-back Super Bowl since the Patriots in 2003 and 2004. And meanwhile, Denver is still one of my favorites. Denver is trying to be the first team to win the Super Bowl the year after losing the Super Bowl since the 1972 Miami Dolphins.
That's a long time. Long time. And I guess I didn't even realize that one. Yeah,
things on the line, and obviously not all of them are going to happen. So.
Right, exactly.
But Seattle could get the back-to-back Super Bowls, and Denver could win the Super Bowl, and Seattle could win a playoff game. So they could all, I guess, theoretically happen. But those are awful long streaks, all of them more than 10 years, obviously.
Right. Any surprise at all that Seattle's facing Carolina? I mean, Carolina does seem. I mean, I know they're just a 500 team, and you know they were one of the third team to make the playoffs in the modern era with a losing record and all that stuff. But Carolina, to me, at least last week, looked like they belonged a little bit.
Well, they did down the stretch.
Yeah,
and they were 2-0, and then they went through the horrendous stretch when they were sitting at 3-8-1, and we dismissed them, and they got hot at the end in a division that nobody frankly wanted to win. But I'll tell you, watching them play last week, I look at it this way. They gave up 78 total yards to the Arizona Cardinals.
Yep.
Okay? And I know everybody wants to bring Ryan Lindley. It wasn't all Ryan Lindley. Okay? You don't do that by yourself. 78 total yards, the fewest by a team in a postseason game in NFL history. And yet, the Carolina Panthers could not put that game away. And that was they turned over the ball three times themselves. So, to me, they go up to Seattle and turn over the ball three times. Safe to say they won't be 9-8-1 after the day.
Yeah, yeah. 9-8-1 is what they're going for. But
yeah, we saw Arizona get the Super Bowl a couple years ago.
Yeah.
9-7. The Giants won the Super Bowl at 9-7.
Yeah.
Seattle won a playoff game at 7-9. And listen, nobody wanted the division, so they took it. But they got to play better than they played last week if they have any chance against that defense. Remember, they played. This is a weird thing. They have played the Seahawks three times each of the last 3 years, including this year. They've lost all three games, despite the fact that all three were in Carolina, and no team in those three games scored more than 16 points.
Wow. So defensive struggle. Let's go this route then. What, in your estimation, would it take for Carolina to actually pull the surprise?
Keep Seattle on the bench offensively for about 42 minutes.
So, in other words, they've got ball control.
Yeah, exactly. Because here's what you find with Seattle. And I know that sounds funny because, well, Seattle's offense isn't that good. Why are you worried about their offense?
Yeah.
Their offense isn't great, okay? And if you limit their possession time, they have fewer opportunities to have those bad three and outs that they have. So if you can cut down their possession time, even possessions, and they have to mount 9 scoring drives instead of 13 scoring drives, you have a much better chance. Go back and see what San Diego did against them, what Dallas did against them, what Kansas City did against them. St. Louis really beat them that day with special teams more than anything else. But those three losses, they got beat badly on the ground, and Carolina's capable. I mean, Marshawn Lynch is Marshawn Lynch, but Jonathan Stewart's been very, very hot. But, again, that's Seattle defense, which has given up 39 points and 3 touchdowns in the last 6 games.
Phenomenal.
That's not shabby.
No, it's not. All right, I'm going to leave you on this game with this. Great quote from safety Roman Harper, who said, "It isn't the prettiest thing, but we got a date to the prom at the end of the day. We're here. She's probably not the best-looking one. She's not going to win prom queen, but we'll have a good time." So I ask you, how good a time are they going to have?
Well, I hope they had a designated driver. I don't think there's going to be a lot of points scored in this game again. I'm looking at Seattle like 19-10.
Okay.
Okay?
Yeah.
And Carolina will make its mark in this game. But their performance last week was a little perplexing. They had everything. As hot as they were, maybe it's just me. Is it possible a 7-8-1 team took an 11-5 team lightly?
You really think so?
Well, I'm just going by their performance. If you hold a team to 78 total yards in fourth quarters, mm-hmm. and yet you're still struggling to put away the game because you're turning over the ball three times, that's a pretty sluggish effort by their offense. Cam Newton threw that ugly pick to Antonio Cromartie. You just saw a lot of mistakes by the Panthers. and they can't afford to make them this time.
True. All right. Well, we'll move on to the 1 o'clock Eastern time game on Sunday and staying in the NFC, the Cowboys at the Packers. You know, I can't believe you and I will remember the last time that the two teams played a game like this at Lambeau Field in the playoffs. Almost a half a century ago, 1967, and the infamous Ice Bowl. I'm sure that if you've been an NFL fan for any length of time, you've seen the old NFL Films footage of Bart Starr squeaking over from inside the one, and the Packers defeating the Cowboys 21-17 for what was then the NFL Championship back on the last day of December of 1967, with -13. The kickoff temperature, -46, was the wind chill. One of the most brutal conditions ever for a game, certainly of that magnitude, with an NFL championship on the line. Now, it's not going to be like that between these two this weekend. But, you know, I got to admit, if I'm looking at this from a strictly, you know, I don't know a lot about the old team, either team point of view. You know, Green Bay having home field advantage with that kind of history, that kind of mystique behind it, gives them an advantage here. The Cowboys, the way that they have played this season, they certainly have stood up to everybody and just about every challenge, and they've been on a roll later in the year. And then you come to find out that Aaron Rodgers, Green Bay's quarterback, has got this calf problem and it might not make him as mobile. And the Cowboys need every advantage they can get with a defense that sometimes gets sucker punched. So I why am I crazy to think that Dallas actually has a shot in this one?
Dallas 30, Green Bay 28.
Wow. Nothing like stepping right out, Russell.
Well, I've been saying it for a couple of days, and safe to say I won't be going to Green Bay anytime soon.
Well, dodge the snowballs.
But my theory on the game is this. I think Aaron Rodgers' calf injury is a non-factor.
Okay.
It will be a non-factor because I have a funny feeling Dallas is going to have him on the sidelines for most of the game.
Because they're going to run the ball.
And I've heard people, well, I had a couple fans. I'm not going to call out names and so on, but I was getting this week. The Green Bay defense since the bye week is ranked in the top 15.
Okay.
Okay. Now, there's 32 teams in the league.
Right. So it's an upper half team.
Okay.
They should be. You're an NFL playoff team. You should be in the upper half.
I get all that. But top 15 out of 32, if you would tell me top 15 out of 100, I would be impressed.
Yeah, right.
Okay? Tell me top 5, and I'd be impressed.
Mm-hmm.
Their run defense numbers are still pretty mediocre, mm-hmm. save for a 16-yard explosion by the Buccaneers in week 16.
Mm-hmm.
They still gave up over 100 yards rushing in 4 of their last 8 games. They're not a great run defense. And I think this is where Dallas gets it done, and I also look for Jason Witten to be a big factor in here as a blocker and a pass catcher against that 3-4 defense. And Green Bay, here's the thing. When Green Bay's on the field, they're going to score, hence the 28 points. But I think Dallas gets more possessions. They get more possession time. You know, both these teams are playing pretty sharp, and you know, I'm not looking for, you know, a ton of turnovers or anything. Cold weather, if it's cold, it should be. It's different than bad weather, rain or snow or so on. But the other thing that stuck out at me, and this, I guess this is a minor point because, you know, what do you read into this? You know, as good as Green Bay's been at home over the years, they've not been great at home the last couple of years in the playoffs. You know, beat by the Giants, beat by the – there was a time until 2002 when Michael Vick and the Falcons went up there that the Green Bay Packers had never lost a home playoff game, be it in Milwaukee or be it in Green Bay.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's happened, I want to say off the top of my head, at least 4 times. The Giants won the championship game there. The Falcons wild card game. The Niners won there last year. The Giants won there again in 2011. And the last couple of times are, you know, with Aaron Rodgers at quarterback and Mike McCarthy the head coach and pretty much the cast they have now. So it's not like I'm going back to the 70s. I just think Dallas is on the roll. They've actually won 9 straight road games going back to the year before. And, you know, it's crazy. An undefeated home team, an undefeated road team. And I guess I'm Willie Nelson because I'm on the road again.
Exactly. The number that I point to is the fact that Dallas has the perfect road record this year. So, again, right. kind of like Baltimore coming into Gillette, not being a skier to anybody, Dallas is not afraid to be on the road. And they play better on the road.
Yeah, not at all. I mean, listen, you look at the four home teams, and I know New England didn't play all its guys, but the four home teams are a combined 30-2 this year.
Wow.
Okay, the four home teams this weekend, Denver 8-0, Green Bay 8-0, Seattle lost to Dallas, and New England obviously lost to Buffalo in the season finale.
Right.
And I'm sure somebody out there is getting ready to tweet, 31.5 or whatever.
Yeah, right.
Because how New England played the game as far as resting people.
Right.
But still, it is what it is. I think when you have the style of football that Dallas has, that's a portable game plan. Now, their defense isn't portable. Their defense should be deported.
Yeah, no kidding.
Okay?
Yeah.
And the key to their season is having them play as least as possible. So that'll be the game plan, but I like Dallas's chances a lot.
Yeah, I had Green Bay and New England as potential Super Bowl teams before the year started. I have to admit, I've been hedging my bet on this all week because for some reason, I think the way the Cowboys have gone about their season with the kind of play that they've had on the road, sometimes it's hard to explain. But I think you sometimes have to have that mojo going that direction in a special type of year. Dallas may have that. So I don't disagree with your pick.
Oh, cool. I can stay?
You can stay. You can stay. Let's move now to the late game on Sunday, which is the other AFC game. Colts playing at the Broncos, 4:40 Eastern time, the kickoff in that one. I spent, as you may or may not know, I spent 3-4 days this last weekend in Indianapolis because I was there for college basketball. So I was actually in Indy while they were playing their wild card game. And, the oddest thing, I'm literally looking at Lucas Oil Field while the game is going on. There are very few cars. There's very few traffic. There's not much traffic. People wandering. There's nobody there. It doesn't even look like there's anything going on in that big armory-looking building that Lucas Oil Stadium is. And I turn on the TV, and they're, in mid-first quarter. I'm like, I can't believe there's a game in there. And I'm wondering if... So I'm trying to make an analogy here that it may or may not, fall flat. So you feel free to jump in anytime. The way that the Colts went about methodically playing the game and then obviously winning the game, there was nothing special to it. It's almost like they expected it. It was almost like Cincinnati expected it. And it's almost like, okay, no big deal. Let's move on. Does that help them or hurt them this week at Denver?
I think what helped them last week was the fact that Andrew Luck didn't turn over the football.
Okay.
It was odd that you have a guy who leads the league in touchdown passes, but he also turned over the ball 22 times. They still were very, very dependent on him. Okay, he threw for well over 300 yards, and, he is their offense right now. Defensively, I think Cincinnati was more the culprit than Indianapolis's defense was. But, when you're losing... Let's be honest. I know it's easy to wail on Andy Dalton, and he looked flat the other day as well. But you take AJ Green and Jermaine Gresham out of the lineup, and those are two pretty pivotal losses.
Yeah.
So I'm not surprised, that they wind up losing when you lose that many quality versus pass catchers. Listen, Andy went to Denver earlier in the year, got way behind, played catch up. Came up a little short. Denver's defense is better, but I don't think it always plays up to its numbers. I could see if Indy wins this game, and it's certainly possible, the formula would be the opposite of what we saw in week one. It would be Indy getting out to a big lead and staving off Denver. But Denver has renewed its interest in the running game. I think that's only one of the part of the reasons is Peyton Manning's numbers are down. Some of it is other inexplicable because the interceptions are up, especially the last 6 or 7 weeks. I think it's Denver at home, and I think it's C.J. Anderson. I don't know if Luck is going to have another game where he doesn't throw a pick because I think there'll be the pressure on him to carry the offense.
Okay. What then would it take for Luck and the Colts to actually pull off the surprise? No turnovers then?
Would be no turnovers and hitting big plays early in the game, which forces Denver to a small degree to abandon their running game.
Okay. Okay. And then therefore making them more predictable, which is, yeah, absolutely. You want to try to do that as best you can. Sure.
Well, I mean, we go back to, you know, one of the reasons the Broncos have changed their offense, you go back when they lost to the Rams in St. Louis. And remember, they ran the ball 10 times and dropped back like 50-something times.
Yeah.
And ever since then, they've changed their approach because you're not going to win. You have any idea, any designs of going to Foxborough and winning in a playoff game, and you already tried it this year in a regular season game, got whacked by 20.
Mm-hmm.
You better have some balance. And, you know, balance still wins in this league. And I think Denver tried it at the beginning of the year, but they couldn't keep their running backs healthy. And now they're trying it again, and their offensive line is slowly but surely coming together. I mean, they still have a lot of weapons. And Julius Thomas being hurt has hurt them as well.
Mm-hmm.
But, no, I think Denver finds a way. I think if they find a way.
All right, and that leads us then to the big one here, Saturday afternoon, 4:35 Eastern time kickoff. Since 2000, the Patriots lead all teams with an 18-8 playoff record. Baltimore is right behind them at 15-7. And as we've already said, and we've talked about it this week extensively, they've got no fear coming in here, having won two of the previous playoff meetings here at Gillette. So what does Baltimore specifically have to do to try to make it 3 out of 4?
Well, listen, what makes this game interesting to me this time around is, and by the way, I think it's hysterical that the Ravens have never won a regular season game here.
Yes, but in playoffs, they can do it.
2-1 in the playoffs.
Yeah, right.
No? The thing that stands out to me in recent years, and even though New England has found the ways to win, it's not like Baltimore's dominated them, but Baltimore's kind of kept Tom Brady under wraps for the most part.
They have.
Is the physical nature of the Ravens. Well, I think it's been a while, but now I see a much more physical nature out of the Patriots. And I don't think we've seen that probably since their last Super Bowl win in 2004 when they were more defensive-oriented than offensive-oriented. And I think that's the big difference. I think they can physically go toe-to-toe with the Baltimore Ravens, who, you know, continue to reload and continue to win road playoff games. And, you know, to me, we can watch Brady and Flacco. And by the way, Joe Flacco, again, you think about how inconsistent he can be, how erratic he can be on the road. Now, I know a lot of people will point to his last 5 playoff games, John, where he's thrown 13 touchdown passes and no picks.
Mm-hmm.
I go back a little further, okay, because Joe Flacco's first 5 playoff games in the league, and he won a bunch of them, 1 touchdown and 6 picks. His last 9 playoff games, in which him and the team are 7-2, John, he's thrown 20 touchdowns and 2 interceptions.
Which is an amazing scenario. And
yeah, I mean, if we were talking about some of the other premier guys and you threw up those numbers, you'd be like, yeah, see? See? Well, you know, you got to give credit where credit's due. I mean, they lost one of those games was the AFC Championship game that they lost to the Patriots in 2011. I want to say the other loss was at Pittsburgh,
mm-hmm,
in the divisional playoffs. So he's played a lot better in the playoffs overall, not just this recent 5-game streak and so on. That being said, it's another steel cage match. I think Nate Sutter does his best and limits the damage Elvis Dumervil could do. And I'm kind of looking at Pats, 23-21.
23-21. Ooh, so you think it will be close, and you will tend to say defensive, because our writers here, our PFW writers here, they think the Patriots win it in a blowout. And then I had a Ravens.com writer on earlier, and he actually takes the Ravens 21-20. I kind of split the difference, and I do think it'll be lower scoring, but I am going to give the Patriots a little bit of an edge. And right now, I'm saying 24-20.
Yeah, listen, for all the good things that Baltimore has done in the playoffs 6 of the last 7 years. I mean, they're 1 missed season away from having the longest active playoff streak.
Yeah.
Okay? Because right. New England Green Bay have been there 6 years in a row. They're 6 out of 7. And never a losing season under John Harbaugh. Or is it Jim Harbaugh? I saw both of them on the sidelines last week. What's going on?
Yeah, so, I know.
I got to lean Pats. I think Tom Brady will exploit his when he gets time. That the one thing that
the Baltimore secondary is not very good. The front seven is, the secondary isn't.
Well, that's the entire, I think the whole game hinges on that fulcrum right there. I just, it's whether or not Brady has the time to take advantage of a Baltimore secondary that's been banged up and inexperienced and not very good because a lot of it of the early injuries they had during the season. But then again, how much pressure does that front seven put on him to make him forced into early decisions that he doesn't want to make? That's the game right there. And we're thinking, at least here, there's just enough time for him to find the guys that he needs to find.
Yeah, exactly. He's going to get knocked down a few times, but he's going to have a few knockout punches.
I tend to agree, and I also think that, you know, the way Rob Gronkowski is playing, that it's Baltimore's going to have trouble handling him every time out. I also predicted yesterday, I think more so than Gronkowski, I think Julian Edelman is due for an outstanding game, a big game, because I think he's Brady's binky, as we all know, and they'll find him in that underneath coverage because they're going to be worried and they're going to pay extra attention to a guy like Gronk. So I think they'll be very much keyed on taking him out, which is going to leave an opportunity for someone else.
Well, John, I'm going to leave you with this because of what you just said. A binky, right?
Yes.
Okay. So if Julian Edelman is Tom Brady's binky,
mm-hmm.
does that mean he gets blanket coverage?
Oh, wait. Where's the drum, Kevin? He's slow. There we go. All right.
Always slow.
Yeah, very good. Very good. Russell, always great to be with you. Enjoy the games. I know you will. I look forward to continuing this next week, one way or the other.
We will. And, after that binky reference, I think I'm just going to go relax and suck my thumb for a while.
That sounds very good. Thank you, Russell. Talk to you soon.
Have a great rest of the week, guys.
Thanks, you too. Russell Baxter, ProFootballGuru.com is where you can find him. Bleacher Report, Fan Sided. Oh, he's all over the internet. Just Google Russell Baxter. You'll find him. All right, we got a lot of phone calls to get to, a lot of predictions to get to, a lot of emails, got some Twitters, some tweets, some Facebook posts. I'll get to as many of them as I can. Rest assured, as I always tell you on this program, I do read them all. Sometimes I can't get them all on the program, but I do read them all. Rookie, feel free to jump in here if you like. Kareem in New Jersey has been waiting the longest, and thank you, Kareem, for hanging on. You're in the playbook.
No problem, John. How you doing, man?
Excellent.
First of all, I'd like to say hi to Austin. It's kind of awesome that you're hanging out with your son on the show. It's pretty cool.
Thank you.
Make sure you know your dad is a good man that I would love to meet personally.
We'll make that happen. We'll make that happen, yeah, Kareem.
Absolutely. Real quick, I mean, just talk about the stats real quick. I mean, obviously you hear all the stats throughout the years about this team, that team, Patriots. You know, with all due respect to the stats, and because I know all the media, all the analysis, all the professors work really hard to keep track of that. I put them aside and let them collect dust, and just to prove my point, like, you know, Peyton Manning or Tom Brady, which one's better? You look at the record. I think we're 11-4 now. Tom Brady's 11, Peyton Manning 4. However, Peyton Manning won the four that mattered. You know, I wish Tom Brady was the better man last AFC Championship. I wish Tom Brady was the better man in the AFC Championship down in Indianapolis. You know what I'm trying to say?
Again,
it's just like one thing you look at, the stats and the numbers and the coincidence. Like, Tom Brady plays better with a beard on.
Right.
Oh, that's great. You know, fine. Fair enough. But if we go back to the Ravens and what they did, I watched that Steelers game, and I'm telling you right now, like, my heart was pounding. I'm like, these guys are coming to Foxborough. They did this to Ben in Heinz Field. They got to kill Tom Brady. If they get to Tom Brady like they did to Ben, Tom Brady will die.
A little harsh, but I understand what you're saying. It'll be very, very difficult.
Really,
yes.
On Ben.
Yeah.
They were really rough on Ben. And Ben is really big, very hard to tackle, very hard to break. You almost get a concussion.
Mm-hmm.
So if they get to Tom Brady, which we all know our O-line is struggling, okay, it's going to be rough. However, I really believe in our defense, and I hope to the Lord that the last 2 weeks gave the offense a little bit of a better communication, a better, sync to make some plays and put some points on the board.
Okay. Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah. With that being said, also, I'd like to thank Scott, who's
Tuesday. He did a phenomenal job filling in for you. It wasn't you.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's job. I appreciate your saying that. Scott's a good kid, and he's an up-and-comer in the business, and I'm glad he was available to fill in on Tuesday. It was a pleasure to have him in.
Absolutely. Also, one more point about Suggs and the whole, you know, the battle between and Don Shula. Hey, man, listen, I live in a state where the, you know, smugglers and murderers in jail call the Patriots cheaters. You know what I mean? So my skin is very tough. I don't really care when you hear, oh, cheaters, cheaters, cheaters. I don't really care. They're going to hold this above our head for as long as we live because somebody got caught with their head in the cookie jar. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Yeah. Everybody does it. I believe everybody does. We just got caught. I hate to say it.
Right.
Prediction, just where I can let you go.
All right.
I think we're going to win 27-14.
27-14. So you like the fact that our defense is going to hold Baltimore down?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Amen. Because, I mean, that's the only thing I'm hanging on, to be honest with you.
All right. Kareem, good stuff as always, my friend. We'll talk again.
Thank you, sir.
You got it. Let's go to Elizabeth in North Carolina, who's been kind enough to hang on for a while. Hello, Elizabeth. You're in the playbook. Are you there, Elizabeth? She might not still be there, Kev. I'm going to put her on hold and give her a chance to come back to the phone if she's away from the computer. Let's go to our buddy Brooklyn Matt. Hello, Brooklyn Matt.
Hey, John.
How you doing?
One, I could put on drag and the double as Elizabeth.
Absolutely. Go right ahead.
Yeah, nice to call you. I'm giving my annual phone call.
Well, you know, you need to do it more often if you can, brother.
Yeah, yeah. I'm here every show, though. I'm on the receiving end.
I appreciate that. Thank you. I know you are.
I was coming home late. I said, oh, shit, I got to get up to the playbook. And you know what was on? I tuned in, and I hear, I was five when I was on Romper Room when I was five. I go, wait a minute. I must have the wrong channel.
That's fair. That's totally fair by you. Shame on me.
You definitely digressed a little bit.
But I digress on this show a lot.
Oh,
come on.
That was choice. Hey, John, do you remember the electric company?
I actually do. That's pretty scary.
Yeah, and Sesame Street, they shoot Sesame Street right over here in my neighborhood.
They still do to this day, right?
Yeah, Children's Television Network's still over here.
Wow, that's fabulous.
They go on location every once in a while, and I've seen them doing live Elmo right from on the sidewalk. And you should see the little kids that are happen to be walking by with their mommies. To see Elmo, like in real life, their jaws just fall onto the floor. It's just to watch the kids' reaction.
That's pretty cool. Yeah. That is pretty cool.
It's lovely.
I remember, I'll tell you a story, Brooklyn Matt, now that you've given me the business about Romper Room. I told a story on live television when I was 5 years old on that Romper Room show that my house had burned down.
Oh, how traumatic.
I know. Well, it really hadn't, but to a five-year-old, I remember my parents taking me by the first building that we ever lived in, and it was kind of run down, and you know, the owners of an old duplex had kind of let it go, and it looked like it had been on fire. It was very random. I said, oh, we used to live there years ago, blah, blah, blah. And so I told this great story. I said, oh, you know, how are you and where do you live and blah. And I'm saying, you know, my house burnt down. And, of course, the teachers look. My mother said, you know, she ran out on the studio floor to say, no, that's not the truth. That's not the truth. But the teacher had this horrified look on her face like, oh, my God, I don't really know where to go from here. So let's just go right on, you know, with the show. And, you know, poor little Johnny, he's had his house burned down. Yeah, but, you know, the whole kids say the darndest thing.
Did they bring the trauma counselors in the green room afterwards?
That's exactly right. It's kind of like, all right, we got to bring in all the trauma counselors here. Good stuff.
And then there's Kevin over there who is acting like Andy. He doesn't know anything about, like, before he was, you know, 1990. And, like, you said there was only four TV channels.
That's true. And I grew up with only four channels. That's right.
You know what? When I was on Cape Cod and the annual family 2 weeks on the Cape, in the 70s, there were zero television channels. There wasn't any TV on the Cape.
So what did you do for entertainment?
You found a tennis ball and threw it up against the wall.
There you go.
And pretended that you were Carl Yastrzemski.
I like it. That works. That absolutely works.
You either went fishing, went to the beach, or threw a ball up against the wall.
Yep. That worked.
And then in the summer of 75, nobody went to the beach because Jaws was in the movie theater. digressing, man, about this Ravens game.
Yes, sir.
It's been a tale of, like, earlier in the week, everybody's big and pumped and banging their chest about, you know, confident. Now all these crazy statistics are brought from Russell Baxter and Brian Billick.
Mm-hmm.
And the AFC one seed is 14-10.
That's
at
correct.
Home?
That's correct.
That's whack.
Yeah, which is why there should be a little bit of concern from this vantage point, anyway.
Yeah. So yeah, and the Ravens' strength is the Patriots' weakness.
True. So I'm just
front.
You're kind of setting it up here exactly, and it's
I've just been obsessing about that.
Yeah, that's exactly right. There's a reason to do that, I think. Give me a thought on the score then, Matt. What do you think?
I'm saying 24-17, Pats.
Okay. Still like the Patriots by 7.
I'm looking for Revis, and I'm praying no laundry comes out against Browner.
Yeah, I know. I think that will also be a very large factor in the game. Thank you, Matt. Here's Elizabeth in North Carolina. Hello, Elizabeth. You're in the playbook.
Hi, how are you?
Great.
I'm calling in.
Thank you for taking the time.
Thanks. I just have a few things that I wanted to talk about. The Flacco, during the time that Flacco has been in Baltimore, the Patriots have never had a defense like the one we've got now.
Mm-hmm.
So that kind of tells me that the numbers, that the wins that Flacco has had against the Patriots, big deal.
Mm-hmm.
That's them. Back then, and this is now. This is different. He's also had better receivers during that time as well.
Okay.
Pretty much the same. The Patriots have played the same Ravens, not necessarily the same people themselves, but the same type of people every time they've played the Ravens. But the Ravens are going to be playing different types of people now. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think so. I'm following. I see what you're saying. Sure. You sound like you followed it pretty closely yourself.
Oh, yeah, I do.
Well, that's good.
So, to me, based on just this season alone and the way both teams have been playing this season, I would say, normally I would say, okay, Patriots 42-29.
Wow. Okay.
But because of the fact that this type of team, this type of Ravens players, that type of players have always given Tom Brady a hard time.
Yeah.
More like a division game rather than like a regular AFC opponent.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to say it'll be a lot closer and say probably maybe 32-29.
So you do like the fact, though, that these teams will figure out a way to score some points then, huh?
Oh, absolutely. They will score points. That's a given. They are going to score points.
Okay.
I'm actually being generous with the points right now because I do know our defense has been really good about limiting the other people's offense.
True.
But it is the Ravens, and it is a different kind of just that does play into my head.
Sure. You know what? And I think I can certainly understand, you know, what you'd say. The playoffs are a different beast. That's absolutely true. Absolutely
right.
True.
Right. And then to what you guys were talking about earlier about Don Shula.
Yeah.
I think like a drunk Hank Williams Jr., Don Shula should never be interviewed like that again. Okay.
That's a pretty good way of putting it, actually.
I
want to kiss you.
That was actually answering that question.
Yeah.
It was a fan answer. It was not. Not a respected coach.
It's not what you would expect for someone who is respected like he is. That was my point, and I think you're right. Maybe he was just being flip, and he just didn't realize what he was saying, and I think I'm willing to cut him a little slack, but the fact that it came out, you know, it was. I thought it was a low blow. I thought it was unnecessary, and I think it tarnishes who he is.
The problem with saying stuff like that is that the media picks it up and runs with it.
Well, of course. You would, too.
Sort of like back in 2007 when, they had a camera in the wrong place and somebody in the media says, cheat.
Yeah.
The Patriots cheated. And immediately, you have now completely destroyed Bill Belichick's reputation where that is concerned.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And that just, I blame the media for it, for both instances.
Well,
the cheating thing and Don Shula's response.
That's all, you know, and I think your point is well taken. But then again, that is the media's job to publicize, to bring out what happens that is of interest to the public, and that's what they do. It does seem like sometimes the media does put a little fuel on the fire.
Yeah.
But then again, if they don't do it and they miss a story, and if you're the person who had the story and didn't get it out there first, guess what? You lose your job. That's the pressure that people in the media have to face. And I think really, you know, a lot of people probably don't understand unless they've actually spent a day in a newsroom somewhere. That's just the way it is. You know, I can't disagree with you. I kind of understand where you're coming from. But listen, if that's my job to get that information out there and to get that story out there so people know that I was on top of the story in order to give myself credibility and my organization credibility, then I'm going to go with it. As long as I have, you know, trusted sources that are backing me on it. That's what I go with. Without that way you don't, you know, look like you're a complete idiot by throwing a story out there that has no truth to it, no merit to it.
But then you want to do so responsibly.
Sure, so absolutely. Responsible reporting, yeah.
You give the story, give the facts,
right.
But to throw a word like cheat out there, breaking the rule is cheating. If you're going to call what the Patriots did cheating, then you do need to call every breaking of the rule cheating.
And that was my argument earlier with Don Shula, because, you know, I believe that there were some rules back in the 1960s when he was coaching, and even in the 70s, that, you know, he stepped around, and I was researching this a little while ago, and I didn't get fully through it. All I know is that some things changed because of what he did while he was, I believe, a coach in Baltimore, not so much in Miami. So all I'm saying is that, you know, his memory is a little fuzzy, and I think he needs to probably watch what he says.
Agreed.
Elizabeth, I appreciate
it. I'm going to leave you with just the fact that, well, I have to begin with, I have Seattle Patriots for the Super Bowl.
Okay.
But I'm kind of, I really, really, really want a rematch between Green Bay and the Patriots. So,
you might get
it. My heart is going to pick against the Cowboys and pick against Seattle.
Okay.
That's what my heart is going to do.
Okay.
But I actually think my head is telling me it is going to be a Seattle Patriots.
Head is telling you differently, I think, like a lot of people. Thank you, Elizabeth, for the time today. I'm going to get a couple of these in, but, Rookie, I want you to tell me what you think about the game coming up.
Oh, it's my turn now.
Yeah, okay. It is your turn.
Okay.
But we got to make it quick because we got another show to get to.
Okay. Well,
today, Junior?
He's been waiting to do that to you.
Oh, man. All right. Well, you said, I think you said, what, 24-20?
I said 24-20,
like yeah. Well, I'm going to go with 26-20. It was the first thing that popped into my head. And I think that the Ravens will be up at halftime. That's one prediction that I have. And I think that the Patriots will start out slow and come out and score the majority of their points in the second half. Now, that shouldn't shock anybody because that's the way the pattern has gone so far this season and in recent memory. And I think that the way how most of the games that I've seen at least have gone, the Patriots are up by a score late in the game. The other team has a chance to win. Has the ball and has it in Patriot territory, and it's going to be exactly like Baltimore in 2011, 2012 when they shanked the field goal and Lee Evans dropped the ball in the end zone that would have won it for them.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's going to be 26-20, and the Ravens are going to have a chance if they're going to have a last drive in the last 2 minutes of the game to score and get the extra point and win it. Now I think that they will not do that, and I think that Joe Flacco throws his only pick of the game in the last 2 minutes, and the Patriots win by 6.
That's how they close it out.
Yes.
Okay. I'd be remiss then if I also didn't ask you what you thought about the Packers and the story that you know, Aaron Rodgers is going to go ahead and go with that torn tendon in his calf muscle.
Well, I mean, my radio show buddy is pretty worried about Aaron Rodgers, just like any other Packer fan would. And but honestly, it's like a Willis Reed situation back when he played for the Knicks and how he hobbled on the court and played.
And how would you know about that? That was about 25 years before
you
were born.
I know stuff. I know.
I don't think you're giving me enough credit.
Oh, well, you know, see, YouTube is a marvelous thing, isn't it?
Not, or just watching ESPN.
Well, that's also a marvelous thing. Okay.
But, but I don't think the calf injury is going to stop him. He might have – it said he has a small tear in there, but, you know – Logan, I know it's different positions, but Logan Mankins played a full season on a torn ACL,
right,
for the Patriots.
Yeah, he didn't have to go side to side.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's not like he has his knee torn or anything. It's just a calf muscle. So I realize that it's going to limit his mobility. But it's Aaron Rodgers, and he's still going to, in my opinion, he's going to win the MVP of the league this year.
He needs to call Hans and Franz in there for a little help.
I mean, Hans and Franz are only pumping up the guns. They're not doing anything for his calves. So
put them down.
That's true.
But I don't think that the calf injury is going to be much of a problem, because he can still throw from the pocket, and he's one of the best. He's the best quarterback in the NFL. He's the best player in the NFL this year. So the Packers are still going to win. I don't think, like Russell said, that the Cowboys will end up winning, even though they have a perfect road record over the last 9 games. I still think Green Bay wins. I'm going to go with 30-20.
Over the Cowboys?
Yes.
I don't think there's any way they hold the Cowboys to 20 points.
Well,
if Green Bay wins,
well, I think that Tony Romo is due for a couple turnovers.
I also agree with that, because I do not have faith in Tony Romo. And I
until
didn't,
you see it.
Until,
you will
until
not,
I see
until
it.
Until you
I,
see him, yeah.
He had a good game. You know, the Cowboys played okay last week. That's great. I'm still not convinced. That's one. Now let's see another. You know, and I just frankly I won't believe it until, if the Cowboys get to the Super Bowl and let's say they play New England, all right, I'll give them some credit. I'll probably still expect them to spit the bit, but I'll give them some credit.
Well, they weren't exactly firing on all cylinders on offense last week either. They were down 20-7 in that game.
I know. So, but they did come back, and they may. And there are a lot of people that say that, you know, a referee's flag or non-flag, a pickup of a flag,
and a missed holding call,
basically got them to where they're going. But I also say, look, teams sometimes on their way to big things needs special things to happen. They need a gift every now and then.
Well, you look at the Patriots, the Tuck rule.
There you go. There you go. Thank you for bringing that up too. All right, we've got fantasy football champs to get off to next. Ton of predictions. Thank you for getting them. I have them all here on record. I will get to them. If somebody wins, then you'll get the playbook. You'll get the yearbook next week. We'll be back. Whether the Patriots win or lose, we will be back next Tuesday here in the playbook. If they lose, unfortunately, we'll wrap up the season. If they win, we got another entire week to go leading into the AFC Championship game. Enjoy the games this weekend.
Tuesday through Thursday, hear from NFL experts on Patriots Playbook.
Pleased to be joined on the program now by Jim Nance from CBS Sports, the senior editor for NFL.com. Vic Carucci, welcome onto the program. Ron Jaworski, Phil Simms from CBS, joining us here inside the playbook. Kenny Albert, who of course calls the play-by-play for the Fox Television Network.
All right, we're pleased to be joined now by Dan Dierdorf, CBS analyst.
Randy Cross joins us here inside the playbook.
Patriots Playbook with John Rook, Tuesday through Thursday at 2.